We know from Rupa Goswami's teachings that there are five most potent activities in the realm of devotional service. And for 11 days, we've been immersed in all five of them. Especially one that's very rare for us is the residing in a holy place. We engage in chanting and we engage in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving the devotees and worshiping deities. But we don't usually do them all day long. And then residing in a sacred place, of course, wherever Krishna is worshipped and wherever his pure devotees are, that place is considered a sacred place. But Vrindavan is very special anyway. So, the result is lots of purification. Now, how do you put purification in a jar and take it home with you? How do you carry purification with you? What do we take home with us from this experience of being together? We'll go back to the very beginning. If you recall, when we first went to Ravel, I was recommending three things. We pray for Radharani's mercy, stay always in a humble mood, and humble and prayerful mood while in the Dham. And that's for the purpose of receiving. Because the opportunity of purification is there equally for every one of us, and not every one of us experienced the same thing. We experienced something different, each one of us. So the mood of being receptive for descending mercy, the mercy of the Dham, the mercy of the association of devotees, the mercy of the deities, and so on. Being in a receptive mood, we can get further purified in the course of our stay. And to the degree that we did that nicely, there's a lesson. There's something to be learned from, and you can take with you when you go back to your respective places. And that's the same mood. There were several occasions when Prabhupada expressed wherever he was in Vrindavan. One occasion that's my favorite is Prabhupada was, he had arrived in Los Angeles and now he was in, you know, at the airport, some speaking something, in the temple room speaking something. Now he's sitting with his disciples, some beaming, happy devotees to be with Prabhupada again in his quarters in Los Angeles. And if you've been in his quarters in Los Angeles, you can conjure that image in your mind. And Prabhupada said, I know that my devotees, you all like to discuss with one another, what is Prabhupada doing now? It's very much like Rupa Goswami's description of the the tax pastime when crossing over Govardhan Hill. In his description of that pastime, it's two gopis discussing with one another, what is Krishna doing now? So, my disciples, you're always interested in discussing and it's true. Whenever Prabhupada was on the planet, we would be very eager to receive news. What did he do? What did he say? Where did he go? What happened? And even today, you have so many opportunities of Prabhupada memories, videos, recordings, some very, very amazing descriptions of Prabhupada, exchanges with Prabhupada by his, in the interactions with his disciples. So he said, now you hear, oh, Prabhupada is now in India, but soon he's going to Japan. And he'll spend a few days, and he did these things in Japan, and then he went to Australia and New Zealand, and then to Hawaii, and very soon he'll arrive in Los Angeles, and now I've come. But one thing you should understand is, in fact, I'm always in Vrindavan. And then he explained that being in Vrindavan means remembering Krishna in Vrindavan, because Prabhupada loved Vrindavan. He considered Vrindavan his home. He wasn't born in Vrindavan any more than we were born in Vrindavan. And he traveled all over the world. And we're in different places in the world. But as we experienced so many wonderful things in Vrindavan, we felt something. And like the t-shirt says, I left my heart in Vrindavan. So we'll go somewhere else, but we'll leave our heart in Vrindavan. And leaving your heart in Vrindavan can mean that you remember. And for some of you, that remembrance may be that very special darshan that this morning you were able to go directly in front of Govindaji and pay your obeisances and make some offering. And or maybe it was those of you that didn't get to go, standing at the gate, and they closed the curtain, making you want to come back again and have the opportunity again. And maybe it happened this afternoon. Or many of you, some sharing with others was Govardhan Parikrama. So many. So it's not just the remembrance, because remembrances also fade. It's the mood. The reciprocation, you know, the enthusiastic participation of the devotees of Govindaji, or the enthusiastic participation at Madan Mohan Temple. And for a number of us that are here, we don't speak Hindi. We don't know what they were saying, or they were singing their songs and their spontaneous way of dancing. Did anybody get a video of that? The dancing of those? You got a video? No, in Madan Mohan Temple. In Karoli. Anyone get that on video? I was thinking our Chinese devotees, they like dancing. It'd be nice if they could have a video of those ladies dancing. So they can... You got it on video? Yes, the ladies dancing? In Karoli? Yes. Very good. Share it with the others. Just especially that part. So they can learn the hand motions. So many different expressions of devotion. Just like this nice pujari of Radha Vinod. Just so many different nice moods of devotion. Very nice. Just happiness in serving in whatever simple way they have to serve, according to the circumstance that fortune has brought their way, and serve happily in that condition and be very contented. Though, whatever it is that are the impressions, cultivate them. And here's another consideration for you. We heard of many of our great acharyas and the exalted nature of them. and their intimate relationship with Krishna and so forth. So, something that you might want to consider is learn more about the lives of one of those great personalities. Select one and spend some time reading about that person, reading the writings of that person, and appreciating the person. In that way, you associate with that person who you already have some feeling for, and you receive from that feeling and from that association, you receive their mercy. And you adopt or develop qualities like them just by that association. So perhaps there's some inspiration from some of the great personalities who we heard about and saw the deities of and spent time at their places. Another, this is something that I learned very early. I learned it in college, but I learned it better in devotional service. When you hear something, if you try to explain that something to somebody, it helps you understand it better and retain it better. It's one of the rules of education. Another one is, taking notes. So, rather than just the memories fly away, sit down sometime with either, on your journey back or wherever you are and make notes, journal. And take from your mind and your heart and express it in a written form and share it with others. Like what we would regularly do when Prabhupada was speaking is immediately after his speaking, after the morning Bhagavatam class, it was prasadam, breakfast. So at breakfast time, we're all discussing what Prabhupada said. And we heard this, and another heard that, another remembered that, and we didn't exactly catch it because we're all imperfect, and we have a different lens through which we hear and experience things. And it not only deepens what you experienced or what you heard, but it brings appreciation for others who heard something that you didn't quite hear so well, and their quality of their appreciation, and it strengthens the relationships and it strengthens the receiving of the important messages. So with those that were attending and with those that didn't attend, take the time consciously of sharing experiences, realizations, appreciations, like that. And you'll find it goes deeper. And it will help stay with you. And similarly, the same prayerful mood. Like, not just while we're here, but the same prayerful mood continuing beyond our presence here. And whichever place or places particularly inspired you, then revisit that place or those places or those deities or something and offer prayers to those persons in ways that resemble their particular, whatever it was that inspired you or touched your heart. Something that's a little higher than that, those are things to do. But something that's a little higher than that is the application. And the application can be a doership way. Like, okay, I learned something and now I'm going to go over here and do that something. And where you received that inspiration from is forgotten, and one gets absorbed in the doership mode or mentality, otherwise known as our dear friend false ego, and we just, that everything is gone. You know, the experience and the remembrance and the quality and the happiness and the realization, it fades. Like putting water in a bucket with holes in it. All the water goes out. And we feel, what happened? I was feeling so happy and so inspired and so good. Like this is what Krishna consciousness should be, and then it all went away. So the alternative is the spiritual conception. Keeping your attention fixed on the deity or the person or the devotee or the place or the whatever. And in a mood of service to those persons or those places or those deities or those circumstances, act in a way that's pleasing to them, pleasing to Krishna. From the soul platform or spiritual platform, it's more subtle. But it will help you retain that the benefit of the purification that has come from our 11-day immersion in being here together in the Dham. And another is the relationships, naturally. I mean, we're just like put a whole bunch of stones in a bag and jiggle the bag around. And the red ones are going to mix with the blue ones, are going to mix with the green ones, and mix with the yellow ones. And they're all mixed by the time you jumble them around a bunch. So we've also similarly come from different locations with our different set of friends and our different, and circumstances have been such that we've met new people and we've interacted with persons we never knew before. And I was sharing with some of the devotees who were expressing to me what an amazing service has been performed by the devotees that were the backup or the support team, the organizational structure. You don't really know what it's like to do that until you do that. It's like there's nothing. And then all of a sudden, there has to be not only something, but, you know, 450 people something. And all their things. There's like no infrastructure. It's just nothing. And then people that don't even necessarily speak the same language. They don't know each other. And they come together and there's a common service. And they do their part for that common service. And then it's over. So we go away and it's over. But those persons have, I mean, we've benefited very much from all of the detailed efforts that they've made. They've gained by that mood of service and the opportunity of service, and you know, their experience is different than our experience as we were going here and there. Their service was wherever they are right now. Who knows even how many persons aren't here right now being with us hearing. So, you know, for us, for our benefit. So we're indebted to them. And, you know, their happiness is it the happiness of the service to all of you, which again is one of our five principal activities in devotional service, serving the Vaishnavas. There's a happiness in that mood of service that isn't found in other ways, doing things you like to do when you like to do them and the way you like to do them. There isn't the happiness isn't there in the same way. So some relationships that may have formed just in the course of being together, being mixing together like this, from time to time, reach out and nurture that relationship. communicate with the person, find out whatever it is that, you know, that's the basis of that relationship. How are things with their family or their sadhana or whatever it is, relationship-wise. And I'll end with this thought. We just taking the one process of chanting of the five primary activities that are the most potent activities within the whole realm of devotional service. Of course, the most important of all of them is the chanting of the holy name. But even we may know the superlative benefit of chanting, like the first two verses of Shikshastakam say, they end with, although I know all these things, and although I'm engaged in the chanting of the holy name, unfortunately I don't have any attraction. Durdaivam Idrisha Mahajani Nanuraga. And our acharyas explain the reason for that is, there's only one reason, we're making offenses. And then Shikshastakam 3 teaches us the mood that need to be adopted to overcome offenses. Humility, tolerance, offering respect to others without any concern at all of respect for oneself. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. That's the entryway into offenseless chanting. Of course, attentiveness is necessary, but offenseless chanting requires you to be in a genuine, humble mood. And that's something we can take with us from all of these things. The devotees that reside in the holy Dham, although they're not externally, many of them, not to the standard. But the very fact that they're residents of the Dham, it makes them special. They're recipients of great fortune. And so on. Yeah, wishing to render some kind of humble service without the purpose of recognition, simply with the purpose of service. Serving the deities, serving the devotees, serving the Dham, serving the scripture, particularly Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned, and serving the holy name. Adopting this humble mood of service is a very important way to help us overcome tendencies for offenses. And if we can overcome tendencies for offenses, we can overcome offenses, these very same activities at once, not gradually, but at once, can bring one to the stage of bhava bhakti. The potency is there in them. So, particularly in contemplating on Rupa Goswami and how Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami and our acharyas express about him, his mood of humility. As exalted as he was, equally exalted was his mood of humility in the assembly of other qualified devotees or with whoever he was with. Everything was done simply in the mood of service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was his master. Govinda Dev was his worshipful deity. On the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he simply served with all empowerment to do that service. So these are ways that we can go further in the realm of offenseless chanting and offenseless devotional service and progress in the stages of bhakti. you've had a great opportunity. So take the opportunity, carry it with you in ways that I've described. If there's some particular place, again, or deity, meditate on, remember, hear, read descriptions of, and revisit those again and again. Perhaps, you know, listen to the recordings of that particular place that you went that inspired you, and hear it again and hear it again. And the writings of our acharyas on that particular topic, read it again and again. So go more deeply into the message and the mood of being in the Holy Dham, and let that give you inspiration to the other processes of bhakti, the other four. Try to come to the stage of offenseless devotional service. So, it's hard to bring things to an end, but we're bringing things to an end. See the Prabhupada ki. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki. Gaur Premanandi. Haribol.